You are listening to Impact Hustlers, and I am your host, Michael Schaffrath. I have made it my mission to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to solve some of the world's biggest social and environmental problems. And for this reason, I am speaking to some of the best entrepreneurs out there who are solving problems such as food waste, climate change, poverty, and homelessness. My goal is that Impact Hustlers will inspire you either by starting an impact business yourself, by joining the team of one, or by taking a small step, whatever that may be, towards being part of the solution to the world's biggest problems. Adam, it's really good to have you on Impact Hustlers. Really excited to talk about your journey and Biomatch. Thanks for joining.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. You are actually a software engineer by training. You've worked for a while with Skyscanner and then also did a PhD in bioinformatics. And I'd love to learn from you a bit more about your journey of doing these two things and how you first started Biomatch and why did you decide to start Biomatch initially?
Yeah, I just have to say before we get into it, I never finished my PhD, so I suppose I'll be better classified as a PhD dropout, my informatics PhD dropout. But yeah, that's true. I did my BSc in computer science and mathematics, and after graduation I joined Skyscanner, where I've worked first full time then part time on a problem of making it easier for people to fly to wherever they want to go for their holidays or for work. And I loved the company. It was one of the best places to work that I could ever imagine. And actually, Biomage's culture is very much inspired by Skyscanner's culture. The one thing that didn't work for me was the mission. I did not want to make it easier for people to fly airplanes and pollute the planet even further. And what I wanted to do is I wanted people to be healthier. I wanted to fix some fundamental problems with human health, such as cancer, cardiovascular diseases like Alzheimer's. And I decided to reduce myself to part-time in Skyscanner. I would work just 1 day per week. And I decided to pursue a PhD in bioinformatics. The PhD really taught me about biology, and I really learned about what it means to do biology, what it means to do to be a scientist doing biological research. And I was able to combine the things I learned in Skyscanner, and I learned during my degree as a computer scientist, software engineer, to biology, and that's really how Biomage was eventually born.
Got it. Amazing. And why did you decide to kind of go from the world of academia, doing the PhD, and kind of dropping out to start Biomage? Did you see like you could kind of actually make stuff happen in a better way through a company, or why did you do it in this way?
Yeah, so I always wanted to build software, and I've always built software. I've built software before I had a company, before I worked in Biomage, before I worked in Skyscanner. The thing about building software in academia is that it's really difficult, because academic research is about creating new knowledge. And if you are creating a tool which makes it easier to create new knowledge, it's actually very difficult to get that funded, because the people who decide where money should flow, people who decide who gets grants and what sort of scientific initiatives get funded, they're very often struggling with the concept of kind of like second order research, which is in this case creation of software that enables data analytics, biological data analytics. And I think that very often, actually industry is very often a really amazing place to do that. So Without thinking too much, 10x Genomics, who's who are a public company that have built an analytics kit for single cell RNA-seq data creation or for data analysis on the wet lab side. They've actually enabled hundreds of papers in top tier journals, including for example discovery of new cell type in the human airways called pulmonary ionocyte, which was immediately linked to cystic fibrosis. And we now know that in order to treat this condition, which is a fairly widespread rare disease, we actually have to treat this particular cell type that we didn't even know existed before 10x Genomics made their kit available. So this type of second order science, so that can really only happen in industry at the current setup of how science works.
Got it. So in simple words, I'm going to try to introduce a little bit on what you're actually working on, but I'd love to kind of you double down on it afterwards and give us a bit of an overview. But in simple words, you basically switched from the world of science into the world of building the tools for scientists to be more effective and efficient in how they work, right? So far, from what I've understood, I think I've been really excited to talk to you because not every day I get kind of deep tech founders on the podcast like yourself. But obviously, you're basically helping biologists that are looking at kind of analyzing, understanding human cells and basically speed up the process where they previously would need a bioinformatician to come in and kind of do a lot of manual work. You basically help them speed that process up and extract insights from human cells. Is that a good summary? And how is that type of research, what are the use cases? What are actually the scientists that you're helping working on, and how do you help them do a better job?
Yeah, no, this is a great summary. I'd like to take a bit of a step back here and just sort of like walk you through the kind of high picture overview of biology that we've really seen happening over the past couple of decades. So traditionally, biology is a low throughput science. So what that means is that a single experiment will very often result in just one data point, which is usually like a smudge in some sort of gel. And that, you know, that indicates the presence of the absence of a protein or some other biological entity that the experiment is trying to detect. And if you're going to be doing discovery in that way, so if you're going to be trying to discover new biology, protein by protein, this kind of low level, low throughput experiments, then learning something new can actually take decades. And there are labs, there are famous biology labs that have had PhD programs for 20, 30 years. You know, a PhD program would be a couple of years, 3 to 7 years, depending on where it happens. And by the end of those 20 or 30 years, they're able to show that a certain disease works in a certain way, according to a hypothesis that was sort of formulated 20, 30 years ago. It's a painstaking process of just generating this very manual data. And one experiment corresponds to just one data point. Since the sequencing of human genome in early noughties, and especially since this kind of high throughput a big shift in how biology is done that followed, nowadays certain types of biological experiments can actually create 200 million data points. And this is the type of experiments that we work with. So single cell RNA-seq, which is the type of technology that we help we help biologists work with. And that type of a single experiment in this type of technology can actually create 200 million data points. And the shift that's required in the skills that a modern day biologist needs to possess is tremendous. And all of this happened very, very recently. These are changes that are, less than 10 years, 10, 15 years, in the field. And the difficulty, the specific difficulty is just making sense of that data. If you've got 200 million data points, what do you actually do? You need computing power that's going to help you process that data and present it in some sort of understandable way. But you also need an interactive interface that will allow you to look at the data set and to ask different questions multiple times, to change your perspective on the data set. It's no longer a data set leads to a result, leads to the next experiment and the next data set. A data set leads to this heap of results, and the process of doing science and the process of actually searching for the answers is actually at this very stage of data analytics, and that's exactly what BioMage enables. And that's exactly what we've built. We've built software that allows both for the computational bit, which is the data processing, but also for the analytics bit, which is understanding the science behind the data.
Got it. And then talk us through the actual research that the scientists that are using BioMage are doing. What's the type of research they're doing? I know you. Some of them are working in cancer, for example, but what's kind of the problems that they're trying to solve, the research that they're doing, what impact does this have on the world?
Sure. So one of the researchers that we work with at the University of Glasgow, Dr. Angela Bradshaw, her research focused on heart bypass. So what she was able to show using the analysis that we carried out for her, she was able to show that there is a certain mechanism that occurs after somebody receives a heart bypass, which can actually in about 50% of cases lead to the failure of that bypass. And using our technology and using the collaboration with the company, she was able to show why that happens, and we're able to devise a plan for how to stop this from happening. So this is essentially kind of like very early stage drug discovery effort here, and we see that again and again and other researchers that we collaborate with. They will work on some of those fundamental problems in cardiovascular research and cancer and rare diseases research and neurodegenerative research. So these are the sort of lines of investigations, and that's how the company pushes the boundaries of understanding of biology.
Got it. Those researchers, how would they work without BioMage? You already gave a bit of an introduction on how, you know, biology essentially works and how experimentation is being done and kind of one by one insights almost, and not generating massive data sets. But what are some of the other solutions out there for those researchers? Are you, with your approach, are you kind of fundamentally changing how they even do the research, or are you kind of speeding them up in terms of just kind of getting them to the goal quicker? How does that work?
So a lot of researchers, and it's true both in academia and industry, a lot of biological researchers just entirely give up on the side of data analytics. They do the wet lab stuff, and they collaborate with a bioinformatician, with a trained professional, a bit like me, who has some biological knowledge, but primarily computational data analytics knowledge, who helps them to make sense of their data. And it's just really a collaboration between these two experts in their respective fields. The only issue here is that there is a lot of biologists, and there's very few bioinformaticians. So all the biologists do not actually have access to that type of expertise. And another problem is that even if they do manage to find a bioinformatician to work with who's going to help them understand their data, very often the collaboration is can be really quite difficult, because biologist doesn't really understand what's possible on the analytical side, and the bioinformatician very often doesn't understand the biological question, and it's a bit of a constant back and forth between the two, and all the kind of communication overhead that can really slow things down, which is the third thing. It's really expensive, because if you're going to hire a bioinformatician to help with your data analytics, you have to pay them a salary. You have to spend 6 months working with them on the project, 3 to 6 months working with them on the project. So using BioMage software gives you about 80% of what you'd be able to get from a bioinformatician. You can, as a biologist, you can just use it yourself.
Got it. In building BioMage, what's been the biggest challenge for you? Has it been on a technological side, or what's been some of the biggest hurdles for you to make this happen and bring the software to life?
I'd say that definitely hiring is really, really difficult. Hiring software engineers is something that we really have struggled with. So we've grown the team from the founding team. It was me, Marcel, and Eva. It was the three of us working on this very early on. Vicky Morrison, our chief science officer, she left academia. She left the University of Glasgow. She joined BioMage. She was our first employee. But at the moment, the size of the team is 15. 15. We've got 15 team members, both bioinformaticians and software engineers. And actually, scaling the company and growing that team and finding the right set of talent has absorbed a lot of my and other founders' energy. And the way we've done it is we've tried to look in our networks. Use LinkedIn as a way to find software engineers, but these approaches haven't given us enough many very good candidates to really be able to scale the team. So eventually, we actually used Stack Overflow we've put an ad on Stack Overflow, which was there for a week. We generated 500 leads, and we just painstakingly went through each and every CV that we've received and organized calls and sort of different interviews at different stages with the candidates, and eventually we were able to grow a team I'm really proud working with, and I think is an incredibly strong bioinformatics software team. But this has been a major challenge in Q4 last year. That was essentially most of my time.
Got it. And what was it, because the software engineers also needed to have really good knowledge of bioinformatics, or was it just generally hard to hire software engineers then?
So we've split the two functions. We would hire a software engineer based on the strength of their software engineering and potentially kind of general interest in biology or bioinformatics. And we'd hire bioinformaticians based on their strength in bioinformatics. So people who have both are really incredibly rare. We don't have many of those in the company. I would say the difficulty has really been just the way the job market functions for software engineers, it is very different than it functions for other types of employees. And actually, I'd often discuss with our chief of staff. She would have worked in hospitality before she got involved, before she did her degree in bioinformatics, before she got involved in startups. The way she thought about employees was just really, really different than we think about our employees. We just think that they're incredibly valuable and that they're just, they are the heart of the company. They are the company. And I think it's in traditional businesses, sort of human resources, the term human resources or even just the approach to the employees is as a sort of commodity resource. But we really do not think about our employees that way. They are the company. And that's it. So it's really just really hiring people who are not only very good at their job, but also are going to become part of this movement that we're building, I'll sometimes say cult that we're building, a human health cult that we're building. That's very difficult.
Got it. So my next question would be a little bit on the technology side. So obviously being a pioneer in such a specialized space where there's actually bioinformatics is not necessarily something that's very mainstream and that a lot of people know how to do. And at the same time, you already said how difficult it is to find software engineers. How did you actually go about developing the technology in such an environment? And what's been some of the hurdles of developing the technology that you have now?
Yeah, so a lot of this is just really great partnerships that we've got. We've got a really great partnership with Harvard Medical School, who are our development partner on the technology. So actually, a lot of understanding and knowledge of what the product needs to have in order to be successful, that really came from their side. So we've been just incredibly lucky to find this just incredible partner that we can work with. And right now we're actually looking to expand our community into partners, both in academia and in industry, other partners than Harvard Medical School. So we decided, I suppose. The way to think about BioMage is the way you think about open source companies such as MongoDB or Elasticsearch. These are companies that have done something, a couple of years ago. They've done something that very few people actually understood. Search engines, databases, these are really low-level things, but they solved a real problem, and they were able to capitalize on this untapped potential of the technology that they've built. And that's really what we are doing for bioinformatics. We are a MongoDB of bioinformatics, if you like.
Got it. So are you taking a similar approach to them in terms of open sourcing, or kind of how do you see the technology being spread, or this approach being spread? Is it going to be BioMage being the monopoly in that space? Is that the goal, or is it different?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're open source. We're building community. So Harvard Medical School is kind of one piece here. We've got a lot of really great, as I said, internal sort of developers who are part of this movement and who are passionate about what we're enabling and what we're building. But it doesn't really stop here. Biologists are constantly inventing new technologies that allow them to new high throughput technologies that have this this property that one experiment creates potentially millions, millions of data points. And it's really working with these new technologies, creating new products that allow us to better understand, the human body, and create new drugs for diseases. That's really what's driving us. And we envision becoming a multi-product open source bioinformatics company that really allows any bioinformatician, any biologist, who has bioinformatics needs to get their job done, in a better way than right now.
Got it. And you already spoke about some of your existing customers and partners, like Harvard and Glasgow as well. I believe that I think if you're not already working with some of them in the future, one of the big markets waiting for you as well are obviously pharmaceuticals and drug discovery. How do you see the impact of this on drug discovery, especially now we're in this interesting time where there's a lot of awareness on this, at least for COVID, in terms of discovering drugs or vaccines? Is that relevant to that? How do you think this can revolutionize the way drugs are being developed?
So single cell technology specifically, and by extension the software that we're building, has got really bright future in the pharmaceutical industry, and there are two components here. So one component is drug target discovery. So working out maybe not how to create a drug, but like what should the drug do? So that's an important aspect. That's pretty much what most of what we're doing just now, most of what we're enabling just now really is just discovering new drug targets. But looking, for example, at what happens further down the drug discovery pipeline, in cases such as high throughput screening, where you select several different, where you screen millions of different molecules and you try to see whether they have the sort of effect on the cell or some other biological system that you'd like them to have. As these are completely very often just really random molecules that you'd be working with. An interesting approach is in confirming that these molecules that you think might be potential drug candidates or potential lead candidates, that they actually do work. So for example, doing something like a confirmatory screen of your lead candidates with single cell RNA-seq, that's something that could really help a bit further down the drug discovery pipeline. And then single cell RNA-seq can come back actually in sort of validating leads in animal models. So looking at how different tissues actually respond to the lead candidate. So the applications in the drug discovery process are multifold and potentially could happen at multiple different stages of the drug discovery process.
Got it. You already mentioned in terms of your entrepreneurial journey and the challenges of building a company like BioMed, you mentioned the difficulty of hiring. You mentioned how important it is to have strategic partners like Harvard Medical School. So quite a few nuggets already for maybe founders that are currently doing a PhD and that are considering to drop out and start a company. On the fundraising side, what would your advice be for founders that are kind of like deep tech founders starting a company? I can imagine most investors don't know what you're doing. they have no clue about your space. There's probably a very small set of investors that truly understand what you're doing. And I can imagine it can be challenging to find the right investors for a company like yours that are aligned with you and that are kind of valuable beyond wiring some money. Can you give us some advice for founders in the space that from your experience on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are two approaches you can take here. So one approach is you can find the investors who understand what you're doing. And that's the beauty of the fundraising process. It only has to work once. You can have 100 conversations with investors. It only has to work once. You only need it to work once. So if you find somebody who's passionate about what you're passionate, or if you find an investor who's got science PhDs, as part of the team, who can help you explain that to the investor, then you're in good hands at that stage. So that's one approach. Just find a partner who's going to help you on that journey and who understands what you're trying to do. Another approach is you need really both approaches. You can talk about science and you can talk about what you're doing in a way which is accessible to different audiences. So whenever I'm talking to an investor, I'm trying to highlight the things that are important for them, things like market size, things like opportunities for collaborations with the industry, such as various metrics that indicate the growth of the company. So I'd say probably learning a little bit about the world of investors yourself is something that can really help a founder to adjust their messaging so that they can explain their company in a way that's understandable to a venture capitalist. So I would say it's a little bit of both. Working on VCs kind of meeting you in the middle and you kind of like moving a bit more towards the world of VCs and understanding how do they speak and how just speaking their language, really. So I'd say there's work that needs to be done on both sides for sure for companies like BioMage to effectively raise money.
That's probably one of the biggest challenges that I have seen with highly technical deep tech founders. A lot of times, number one skill for any founder is sales, whether you're selling to investors in order to get investment or you're actually selling your product. And sales is very often about the audience, right? Really understanding how to relate to the audience and speak their language. So really good advice on that. But the good thing, you can learn it, right? So even if it's not your background, if you're not strong at it, traditionally, it can be learned, right?
Yeah, and I think actually programs like Y Combinator or IndieBio or PetriBio, so accelerator programs are really, really helpful in honing those business skills and making technical founders better founders, better CEOs, better salespeople.
Yeah. IndieBio, by the way, for anybody listening that who wants to kind of learn more about companies like yours, is an amazing program. IndieBio is SOSV that's behind it actually as well. Really a bunch of amazing companies that are being supported across the world, really. And you've been part of that program as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We graduated from New York, from the New York batch, from the first New York batch, last autumn. So I can very highly recommend the program to any founder who'd like to learn about how to build an amazing company.
Amazing. I got one more question for you. If you think about Biomed and more importantly, the world in 10 years' time, how does the world look like in 10 years if Biomed succeeds with what you're trying to do?
So there is a huge opportunity in precision medicine. And I believe that precision medicine will happen and has been waiting to happen and will happen sooner or later. And I believe Biomed is going to be a big part of that story, because especially in cancer, every disease is different. Every cancer is different. And having an assay that tailors treatment to the cancer, to the disease type that a certain individual has, is just going to be world changing. And techniques such as single cell RNA-seq and sort of newer iterations of the techniques such as spatial transcriptomics, I believe will become a huge part of precision medicine. And I believe that Biomage will become part of that story on the data analytics side.
Thank you, Adam, for joining me today. It's been really inspiring to speak to you, and I wish you all the best for the journey ahead. Thanks for joining.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, share the episode, leave us a review, and consider becoming a supporter on buymeacoffee.com/impacthustlers. This means a lot to me. Thank you very much for tuning in, and see you next time. Bye.